Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Bottled in China. I'm your host, Emily Seconborn, and this is the podcast where we talk about wine, food, beer, lots of cocktails today. And today I'm joined with Theo Watts, the founder of Thirsty Work Productions and Drink Magazine Asia. He's been based in Shanghai now for over 10 years and helping the industry build one step at a time. He is really the legend in Shanghai. First of all, Drink Magazine was a magazine previously in a publication, now turned online, focused in English, Chinese, Thai, Korean, and it really helps to elevate the entire drink scene out here in Asia. They have the Drink Magazine Bar Awards, which is kind of like the Oscars for any bartender out here. And in this podcast, we talk about, you know, his background, how he all got started, how he even got out in China, you know? And then, of course, we discuss kind of the trends in China. We even discuss the automated kind of cafe, bar, cocktail concept out in Shanghai, where there's basically a robotic arm that makes your cocktails and what he thinks about it, you know? And we go on to talk a little bit about Baijiu and craft spirits made here in China. What's the future of beverage out in China and the bar scene? Super excited to get this podcast. Thank you to all our listeners here today. Don't forget to subscribe. Follow us on iTunes. You can also find us on Himalayas. Spotify is not yet there. I almost said that. But of course, thank you everyone for listening today and leave a comment. So welcome back, everybody, to Bottled in China. Today, I'm joined with Theo Watts, the founder of Thirsty Work Productions and Drink Magazine Asia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So we were just discussing how this will obviously not be about 25 minutes, but let's make the best of whatever time it is. And definitely excited to speak with you because you have a really, really interesting background in China. Over 10 years in China?
Yeah, I've been here 11 now, I think. 11. I came in 2007, January.
Wow. And, you know, you've always been in the drink industry in China. And for you, can you give us a little bit of your background?
Actually, I came from a hospitality background. So I was lucky enough to go to hospitality school in Switzerland, in Montreux. I did 4 years of hospitality, learning through hotels, all the different bits and pieces that you learn. You never learn about service because that should just come naturally, but you learn all the details, right? So, and then I got into bar, I think, mainly when I was at the W Hotel in Sydney in 2004 to 2006, when I had the chance to work with an amazing bar team in operations. And that's when I kind of fell in love. That's when hotels became bar and beverage.
And what brought you all the way out to China?
A friend of mine, actually. I don't know how many of the listeners are going to be aware of a small little vodka brand that was here about 11 years ago, which was called Solid Vodka. And it kind of came and went relatively quickly. But one of the partners behind that was starting up a bar in Xintiandi called The Collection.
Okay.
And the bar that was supposed to be based around dessert-style cocktails, it was a bit of a cool gimmick at the time. And then I'd been doing some dessert cocktails at the bar that I was at in Sydney. And he'd seen that online somehow. And he said, hey, can you come over and build a cocktail list dedicated towards kind of like dessert cocktails and all that kind of stuff?
Now, kind of the dessert cocktail scene, I think that a lot of people's idea, and I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the expert. A lot of people feel that in China, drinks have to be very sweet or that that's the palate. And they said that about wine. They say that about a lot of things. When you came and that was the concept, did that actually work 10 years ago? And would it still work today?
It did. It did work 10 years ago. And Shanghai, as you'll know, Shanghai and China to an extent has quite a sweet palate. What we developed then was the gimmick was kind of like the dessert cocktails, was a play on many different types of desserts. But then there was two bars in this place. It was called Sugar and then Cube. Cube was the male, was a little bit more kind of centric towards the stronger drinks, the more kind of the drinks that kind of the guys would drink. And then Sugar was more towards the sweet side and a little bit more flowery and kind of pretty kinds of drinks. The nice thing about that place was when I came here in the very beginning, I came with a slightly anal attitude to cocktails. What I mean by that is that I came from this amazing cocktail culture in Australia, and I came to China and I was really kind of like tunnel visioned in how everything should be done, like fresh juices, fresh syrups, fresh all of these different bits and pieces that we don't shake, we don't blend daiquiris or any of these different types of things. And when I was in China, the best thing about being in China was it just opened me up to thinking that anything is possible. And you shouldn't be negative about anything that's being done, because everything that we can do is something in the right direction of building the industry.
Well, that's something that you actually say, is that you're helping to build the industry and basically one step at a time. I mean, it's been 10 years. There's obviously so much change in Shanghai alone. And I think, you know, being here for 10 years, I've been here for 7. It's crazy how many things have changed up and down and changes. For you, do you still think that there's a really long way to go, or do you think that we're on the right path?
I definitely think we're on the right path. I think that from 10 years ago, like, there wasn't many bars. There was some, but there wasn't many bars that were doing kind of like, had a great understanding of what casa cocktails were, that had an understanding of how you can twist and play with classic cocktails or create your own originals or anything like that. Now it's amazing how it's changed over the last 10, 11 years. I mean, yeah.
What is the biggest change that you've seen?
I think what you probably saw about 10, 11 years ago was you started to see this trend of quite a lot of Japanese style cocktails coming out. So that came from the Constellations of the world, from Kinsan's group that he has now. He has 11 of them. But kind of the nicest thing about what Constellation did, it was bringing the Japanese style coming to China was awesome, because it gave this regimental approach to bartenders, to have an idea that bartending needs practice. It's not all about freestyle going, you know, it's good to have some rules when you first start as a bartender, because everyone bartender thinks that they're the coolest dude in the world, or the coolest dude out in the world. What Kin kind of gave, and then especially, you know, Kin's group was an amazing showcase, an amazing window for Chinese bartenders to see the light at the end of the tunnel, that bartending wasn't just getting a ticket and making a kamikaze in a massive bottle club. What he did is he showed the rest of the bartending industry it is possible to have a small business as a bar owner. And then you see many small bars that kind of came off of that, whether they were, you know, entrepreneurs who are starting their own bars, but that went in a Japanese kind of style, more of an English or classic style, where you see the ice balls, you see a great amount of whiskey, everyone seated on a table like bar like seat that you see in Constellation. The next step from there for me was the implementation or the introduction of some amazing Chinese bartenders that had spent time abroad. So people like Eddie Young,
yep.
People like Lu Yao, Carson as well, to an extent, they'd all spent some time abroad, and they'd all come back with a freestyle idea of how cocktails work, which is the next step in understanding. So you have that regimental approach of, I take my job seriously. I'm going to do it properly. I need to learn all these great classic cocktails to get my base. Then I'm going to see somebody else as I learn, I'm going to see somebody else like Eddie or like Yao, who come out with this completely different freestyle, really cool way of in which they work. And then they're like, oh, this is possible, or this is possible, or this type of shaking is okay. Or I can actually talk to a customer like this. I can give, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a really nice direction in how the industry has gone from kind of having that kind of regimental base of learning the basics all the way through to the finessing classic cocktails and all the rest. And then learning from that step that it's okay to be a bit more free in how you present yourself.
Yeah. Now, it's funny that you say that, because these are a lot of people obviously from Shanghai. Do you see that the entire bar scene kind of blowing up in other areas out of Shanghai? What are some cities in China that are actually becoming quite good in the cocktail scene?
There are so many. I mean, when we started Drink Magazine, we incorporated 2008, first issue was in 2009, January. We started in 5 cities. Towards the end of the print magazine, which finished in November last year, when we went online, we were in about 165, 170 cities.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was organic growth. That was kind of people asking us for the magazine on WeChat from around the country. So that just shows the want of people, bartenders around the whole country, that wanted to learn a little bit more, which was awesome.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at places like, you know, Xiamen, Chongqing is going crazy right now as well. But you see, you know, Kunming, Wenzhou, Nanjing, Hangzhou, like the surrounding satellite cities to Shanghai are doing amazing. Mm-hmm. I've got friends of mine that are going out and training in heaps of different places all the time. And they're constantly coming back going, my God, I went to see 18. Today I spoke to a friend of mine. She said, I went to see 18 different bars in 2 days in Hangzhou. And they're all real proper bars.
Wow. Okay. Yeah,
and I was like, shit, you're learning more. You're learning, you're getting more in there than I am at the moment, because, you know, she's out there, she's pushing her product out there as much as she possibly can. And that's what the industry is doing. I think it's kind of, it's not just about bartenders. The industry is people, it's the people that are pushing the spirits, it's the people that are selling the spirits, and everybody else in between, that are making this industry what this industry is.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of it obviously comes from also the kind of the road that you've led and allowing people to see and read the stories and understand the product and kind of go through that as well. So let's go back to a little bit about what you founded and created in your time here, because that's almost amazing. You almost have like a legend story. So tell us a little bit about how it all got started, how you started Thirsty Work Productions, how you started Drink Magazine Asia.
So as I said before, I came over in 2007 to open this bar. We created three different bars across this one concept. And I had about 10, I had a family of about 10 bartenders that we taught the cocktail list, not just obviously the cocktails we had, but the classic cocktails and the reasoning behind why these classics were classics and all the rest of it. When I left that bar about a year later, it was due to the fact that I had two ideas, actually. I wanted to do a newsletter, mm-hmm. trying to bring, you know, more of the bartenders together and trying to teach them the stuff that I taught these amazing guys. Or I wanted to build a bar spoon. It's one of those two ideas. I wanted to build the Bonza bar spoon. And then I spoke to a friend of mine, and my friend said, like, well, if you build the Bonza bar spoon or an equivalent of the Bonza bar spoon, you need to have something to advertise it on. So you'll need to put it into a magazine. So why don't you just do the magazine first and then do the Bonza bar spoon second? So I was like, okay, cool.
So that's how it got started.
So I was talking to another friend of mine today who's started a really cool bottle cocktail company called Liebar, a guy called Mark Connolly. And I was just saying to him, I was just talking to him about, you know, how he's a pioneer, because the most important thing in this industry is to try and make sure that cocktails, especially within the cocktail side of our industry, we can get them in front of as many people as possible.
Yeah.
And that was the point. It was the point at the very beginning of starting the magazine, was to try and create a vehicle that would come out every 2 or 3 months that would give as many reasons as possible for bartenders to want to stay bartenders is trying to give as many reasons as possible for bartenders to fall in love with what they do. Before they weren't in love with what they did. They were just doing a job. They were just getting a paycheck at the end of the day. But if you're somebody within your job that's actually fallen in love, that's that moment that you realize that you're more than a bartender, or you're more than a person giving service.
Well, definitely. And I think as well as just a consumer walking into the bar can feel that as well, right? When it's passion led versus when it's just a job and a paycheck and they don't really care much about what they're doing.
No,
so
exactly.
It definitely is inspirational, because so many times I've gone to various bars or various hotel lobbies or restaurant lobbies, and then your magazine is there and I'm reading about it and all these stories about people and their background and how it really is an interesting community that helps each other go up. You know, you don't see that in all different industry facets. And I really have to say the bartending industry, and having spoken on the podcast with Yao and Eddie, a lot of it was, how do we bring people up? How do we increase passion in our industry? How do we make people almost brand ambassadors of what they do and what they love? Mm-hmm. So it's really fascinating that you guys really, you know, put that in motion as well.
Yeah, it's an industry that has there's so many different stories that can come out of it. And there's so many different facets to understanding how bartenders tick, but how the industry, it's how the community and how the family can interact and can work together. The idea of the magazine in the very beginning was built on three different things. It was built on drinks, venues, drinks, and people. So the idea was based on benchmarking the best venues that we thought. We never wanted to review a venue. We thought enough places are doing, enough magazines were doing that.
Yeah.
And there's no way that you can build an industry by being negative on a venue. So it's the venues that we thought deserved to be in the magazine should be in the magazine. And we built those from a couple of different perspectives. So some venues were called Open for Business. Some were called Made in China. So the ones called Made in China were the venues that have been open or alive for more than 3 years, generally, mm-hmm. which is the amount of time the venue might fail. So if they're alive for more than 3 years, then they made it to Made in China.
So what for you actually, you think, what's the secret recipe that a bar can stay open over 3 years and make your Made in China list? I mean, is there any secret recipe or something that they do that's consistent with being open and keeping these customers in?
I am maybe the wrong person to ask that question to, but at the same time, maybe the right one. I opened as a very small partner, I opened a venue a couple of years back called Starling, which was a rum based venue.
Yeah.
And that failed after about a year and a half for many different reasons. And all of those different reasons, whether it's having the right people in front of the stick or behind the stick, whether it's about having the right alcohol partners that you're working with, whether it's when you, as a director of a business, when you're doing something, you should put all of your heart into doing just that one thing. You know, don't do it as a side project. You know, and that kind of told me that never to open a bar again until I have the time to be able to dedicate to it and be the host and be there every night and do that kind of stuff. I think that that's a really important part. So I think kind of being there all the time, or at least kind of bringing the right people into your business that can be that entertainer.
Yeah.
Be that person that can entertain guests. And, you know, like Yao and like Eddie does, for examples, they're perfect hosts. Everyone leaves with a smile, you know, and that's the idea of what the perfect bar is just enabling that to happen. That they come out happier than they came in the beginning.
I think that's a good angle to take. But talking about kind of hospitality and having somebody behind the bar, you know, creating that link. I know that you guys had an article a little bit, I think a couple of weeks ago, about Ratio, which is the automatic cafe bar. I know this is coming, right?
No, I didn't know.
Oh, really?
This is interesting. I love this.
So, you know, actually, it's a very almost a heated topic. I think a lot of bartenders are kind of against it. And then yet, you know, what's your opinion on this?
My opinion is, the very reason why. So as you will have seen, and I laughed about this with Yao, because Yao reposted it in his WeChat talking about how he wasn't a fan.
Yeah.
And you can see my reaction to that, because I actually made a post back just, and I don't normally disagree with people's opinions that often. The reason why is because I think that one thing where I feel happy about being in this industry for so long is really understanding the macro of what this industry needs. My Ratio is a concept that is not here to try and replace bartenders. It's not here to try and do that at all. The positioning and the way in which they're working is to be dropping these small little bars in different atriums of different malls around the country over the next 5 to 6 years. And what it's doing is, with this kind of gimmick approach of this arm, is it's all of these thousands of passers-by that come through these malls and see this thing, and they're like, oh, that's one of those. Those robot arms are cool. What do they do? And they make GHOs. They make cocktails. Oh, that's really cool. I've never heard of this cocktail phenomenon thing, but you know. And then they go up, and because it's all done through a WeChat app.
Yeah.
The idea of ordering it is a little bit easier to do it, because it's tech. You know, stick in your order, and then it comes out, and then it comes to your table. It's a bit easier to approach than a lot of these different bars that are out there that are great, but they're very kind of like Western. It's kind of like you've got to, you know, break out across to the other side and go into this bar that's, you know. So the point is that, you know, I love, you know, of course I've been an advocate of bars and bartending and everything else for the last 11 years here in China, but I would like to see, especially when, you know, 1% of the Chinese market are consuming Western spirits and Western alcohol, give or take, you know. Of that, in terms of cocktails, you're looking at probably 0.5% of 1%. You know, there's not a large amount of cocktails going out. So what we need from the industry's perspective is as many people having an opportunity to try a cocktail as possible.
So you're saying this is going to break down some of the walls, allow people to test something out, and then hopefully if they get into the cocktails, they want to go explore other options.
Exactly. So they see this gimmicky, cool kind of device that's sitting in a shopping mall as they're going, you know, from Michael Kors to going into somewhere else. And they're like, oh, this looks cool. Why don't we give this a try? And what's interesting, talking to Gavin from My Ratio, is I was in there at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon the other day, and he'd already sold 35 cocktails.
No way.
Yeah.
So it works. So obviously something's happening.
So they've got no acclimatization of when a cocktail should even be drunk. The, you know, consumers out there. So,
yeah.
You know, whereas for us or people, Western people, people that have been privy to cocktails for a large amount of time, it's like you go from the aperitivo and into then, you know, into the rest of it and for the rest of the night. But these guys are like, oh, these are flowery, cool looking drinks.
Try it out.
And that's when that kind of that sweet and flowery and colorful element needs to come out, because that's what it will attract people to the idea of what a cocktail is. If there's an arm in a shopping mall that's going to attract people to the idea of what a cocktail is, amazing, bring it on.
Yeah.
And let's bring on as many as we can so that we can
get people
attract
interested.
More and more people. And that's why I say the same thing as companies like Liebar or companies like Seku, who are both doing kind of like bottled cocktails or tapped cocktails approach to things and trying to get out. You know, there's another argument for a bottled cocktail. It's like, well, you know, this is from a bartender as well, but the bartender's not there to be able to talk about his cocktail when you buy his bottled cocktail, right?
Yeah.
So the point is that with these bottled cocktails, you can put a bartender's brand or a bartender's face behind that, and then you can put that bartender's brand into as many shops or as many cafes or as many different kind of places as possible, which gives another excuse for somebody to want to drink a cocktail.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I think, you know, on a Western perspective, and a lot of our audience is actually out of China, a lot of the time it's a little bit like tea. I would never walk into a very traditional tea shop because I just wouldn't know where to start. I wouldn't know how to talk to them about what I want or even the flavors. But yet, you know, now I'm getting used to tea because I go to all these, and this is a horrible example. I hope somebody that doesn't like tea is listening to this, or, you know, I feel bad, but all these like fruit juices and fake teas that I'm starting to kind of understand, and I don't feel intimidated. So whatever makes people unintimidated by the product is really important.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I'm the same about tea. Like,
I kind of learn it though. I'll be honest. We live in China for this long. It's kind of a shame that both of us are not kind of grasping the tea. Yeah. We should be picking our own tea leaves by now.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So now, having said that, obviously, do you think that this is kind of a one-time thing that, you know, once people kind of go and try it out, it's a lot more experimental and it kind of is something that, you know, you kind of do for fun. Do you think that this actually could be something that in hotels would be a great thing to have, because it does, you know, it is quite consistent. It is something that can be done for bigger events or things like that. Do you see that reaching beyond kind of that, you know, K11 or Raffles where it is now? Do you kind of see that also maybe stepping into hotels or actual bars?
I talked to Gavin about that the other day, and he was talking about some opportunities that he's got in the future. And I said to him, but only in the lobby, right? And he was like, yeah, in the lobby. And it's like, I said, the moment that you take those out and then you put them into a real kind of, you can't have a speakeasy bar with a robot arm in it, right? I mean, that's what I, he's like, oh yeah, no, we wouldn't put them into that perspective, because then you're really treading on that territory of in a way of replacing the bartender in a speakeasy kind of place. In the lobby of a hotel, that's a high trafficked area where people are coming in. It's a place where you might have, you know, one of those robotic pianos doing their stuff, or you might have, you know, something else, these interactive lobbies that you're seeing more in the West, but kind of, you know, so, you know, everyone's trying to do something different. Every hotel, and you see additions coming here, and you're seeing outside of China, not yet in China, but kind of hotels like Ace and all the rest of it that are really kind of, they've got these great lobbies, which almost look like you're walking into WeWork. happening. It's really good to be able to, every hotel wants to be able to have some kind of gimmick or something to attract people to their lobbies. So I can see it. I can see it happening in that respect, but I'm going further than the lobby. I'd keep it to a gimmick that happens in public areas to bring people that wouldn't normally be privy to the idea of what a cocktail is in, and go from there. But that's where I do.
Yeah. And talking about, again, more innovation coming in from China, another article that you guys had was about kind of the craft beverages and craft spirits that are taking place in China. We interviewed Peddler, you know, which is based in Shanghai. That's a Shanghai-based gin.
Right.
I was reading about Dragon's Blood. Is that from Mongolia? I've never tried that one.
I can't remember where it's from, to be honest. The Dragon's Blood is the one I don't know, I know the least about. I know the guys from Peddlers, which I love, Ryan and Fergus, the guys from Pangolin, pretty cool as well, doing something different as well. I think that the guys from Citizen Baijiu, which is a really, really, I'm really interested by that brand as well.
So talking about, you know, I think that there's a lot of hype around kind of gin, but what about Baijiu? I mean, what's your stance on Baijiu? You lived out here. I'm sure you've had a couple of gambades of it. When it's bad, it's bad.
My wife's from Sichuan.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I've done the wedding bit. I was lucky enough. I am lucky enough to have seen the way that Baijiu is made. I had the chance to go and see Lu Jialao Jiao in Sichuan a couple of months ago and just see the process into which it's made.
So for you, is it something that you think in the future of China? Because there's some, you know, numbers saying that a lot of people that are getting older are not actually, you know, they don't want to drink Baijiu anymore because of health reasons and they're trying to switch to lower alcohol. Do you think that, you know, can the younger generation now pick that up? Can it be used in cocktails? What's the future of Baijiu from your perspective?
I think, honestly, that a lot of these different Baijiu companies are going, and I think that some of them are starting to realize it now, but they're going to one day wake up and go, and they're probably already thinking about it, but like, oh my God, like you've got a generation or two left of massive volume until you look at kind of like my generation or the generations that are younger than me, to an extent, at least in the bartending industry, they do not like Baijiu.
Yeah,
and so they don't want to drink it. They don't want to mix with it.
Really?
So you're looking from that perspective. And most of these Baijiu's are coming at 53%. They're one or two times distilled max, depending. But kind of, I don't know. I still love the idea of what Baijiu is. And I'd love to be able to work with Baijiu companies to be able to say, okay, outside of the fact that they make so much money and there's so much money being made there that could be reinjected into the industry, mm-hmm. reinjected into bartenders and reinjected into understanding that when I first came to China, honestly, I was surprised because I looked down at the Speedwell and I was like, why isn't there a national spirit in here?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, because it's like super strong and it's super harsh and blah, blah, blah. In the last year or so, when I've seen companies like Lu Jialao Jiao come out with Baijiao, or I've seen Citizen coming up, and there's a bunch of other ones as well. Zhang Xiaobai have also created a lower alcohol version. All of these Baijiu's have created lower alcohol versions. They've dropped down to 40%, which is a little bit, you know, it's a little bit better to be able to play with. So what I would love to be able to, if I have more face time with those companies and, you know, I'd love to be able to say to them, look, you know, let's try and reshape how Baijiu can be looked at, not just nationally within China, but also internationally.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, soften it a little bit, kind of.
Make it more elegant
and then really make it something that then these big companies that are making so much money can then send great Chinese bartenders abroad to the rest of the world and ambassadors national spirit out, and therefore ambassadoring Chinese bartenders out more to the world. And that would be amazing, you know, like, you know, it'd be great to be able to do that within the industry and then work with these great top foreign bartenders to be able to start utilizing these Baijiu's and working on these Baijiu's through their cocktail programs, and to say, you know, it would be amazing.
Well, it's something, you know, it would be very interesting to see, because I think Baijiu is something that is kind of pushed to the side, you know, while we're focused on so many other things, but it can be very beautiful if you have very high quality Baijiu. And in China, there are some, you know, small batch, high quality going on, but it's really not what you see, right? It's very hard to find. And I think it's starting in some spots, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what the next 10, 15 years are going to hold. But, you know, knowing China, they are going to adapt. That's one thing that I'm never scared about is, you know, they're going to switch it around. They're going to make it work somehow.
100%. There's one bar that I love called Gila, which is a little bar ran by a girl called Phoebe Han, who is tirelessly trying to push and is pushing the romance that sits behind the national spirit or the national wines of China. So kind of looking at Huangzhou's, looking at Baijiu's, looking at Xiaozhou's. And you go there and she's got an amazing array of different infusions with Baijiu or just small batch Baijiu's, and she'll give you a tasting. She'll give you kind of like a small little cute kind of tasting set of five or six different Baijiu's that you can try, and she'll take you through and she'll say, oh, this one smells like blue cheese and this one's a little bit different. And then the next step from there is she'll make cocktails with them.
Wow.
So whenever I've got foreign friends coming in, or I've got kind of like guest bartenders that I want to show, you know, where the Chinese bar industry is going, I look at her as it sounds funny because Baijiu's been around for so long, but I look at her as a pioneering bartender that's, you know, she's facing she's facing so many people that are like, oh, Baijiu doesn't taste good. You know, I don't want to drink Baijiu. And she's there. She's been put on this planet. She's been to change people's ideas of what Baijiu is.
That's awesome.
And I think that it's not, and not just being kind of like, you know, somebody that's pushing that, but also just being a powerful, cool girl out there as a bartender, which, you know, which is definitely, it's awesome. There's so many more females coming out of the woodwork that are pushing bartending from different degrees, which is, it's brilliant. And it's happening more and more and more.
Wow. Well, that's good to know. Now I'm going to have to write that down in the show notes so that people can go and try it out. Because there's actually a lot of questions about Baijiu that come in. And as a foreigner, you hear about it, you want to taste it. And it is very hard to find people that are very passionate about it, that are willing to share their story and experience around it. So I'm definitely going to have to share that one in the show notes.
Yeah, she's super cool.
So going back a little bit back to you, I'm just so interested. And I feel like I'm always going back out and everywhere. You have so many things that you were working on, as well as for the Drink Magazine Bar Awards. Tell us about that, because that the Drink Magazine Bar Awards is kind of like the highlight for everybody in the industry. Mm. I mean, what does it take to get in, and you know, who are the winners last year? What are some trends that you're kind of seeing as well, and things like that?
We started the Drink Magazine Bar Awards at a point that we thought that the industry was ready. So it was something that we wanted to do from the very beginning. We were thinking about bar shows, we were thinking about awards, all these different bits and pieces that are happening in the rest of the world. DMBA, we decided after about 7 years to start Drink Magazine Bar Awards. And the idea of that was to be a celebration of our whole industry, was to bring everybody, I'm not going to say everybody who is anybody, but it's to bring as many people as we could from every facet of the industry into one room.
Yeah.
And to celebrate what's been done in the year, to kind of, I think about it like the Oscars almost. Like the Oscars actually is an industry party.
Yeah.
for actors. Right.
Yeah.
But it's obviously it's a very kind of nostalgic kind of thing. The people, you know, not nostalgic. It's a very aspirational. So the Oscars is an aspirational thing for everyone. Everyone kind of loves the ideas of meeting a celebrity or meeting an actor or being able to rub shoulders with that kind of industry. The idea of DMBA was to become the Oscars of the drinks industry, not just in China, but for Asia and potentially for the world. That everyone can look at it and say, shit, China's, there's something happening in China there. So when we built that, we really kind of wanted to build something that said to everybody that this is special. So the award was designed by my dad.
No way. Yeah. I didn't know that.
The award was designed by my dad over a bottle of whiskey in his house, kind of like a couple of years ago. And then we had it made out of solid silver. So it's made at a beautiful silversmith in Essex out of solid silver. And we produced basically 16 awards in the first year, 17 awards in the second year. We're looking potentially to create 20, 21 awards this year.
What would be the new categories or the new kind of extent?
So the idea of all of the different categories that are in Drink Magazine Bar Awards, every single category is a facet of the bar industry that without it, the bar wouldn't survive. So the idea of celebrating the bar team, the idea of celebrating a cocktail program, the idea of celebrating a wine program, for example, and on and on. Service, music, design, you know, all of these different bits and pieces that people need to really heavily think about as they go into building their own bar. The whole idea was we're celebrating the most popular bars at that moment. But the idea is then to trickle down through to people that are building their own bars in their own small little towns to go, you know, kind of like, oh, there's awards for Drink Magazine for designs. So we've got to concentrate on design. Mm. There's awards for service. We've got to make sure our service is good. It's really important
to set these
bars and these benchmarks for everyone to aspire to want to be.
Yeah.
So for example, the front covers of Drink Magazine for a long time with bartenders, that was a bartender's goal. It's like, oh, I've made it as a bartender if I can get on the front cover, which is always great to hear. The new awards for this year that I'm aiming at, and I haven't got them yet, but kind of the sponsors yet, but are based around sustainability. So we're going to do, there's a big focus this year on sustainability.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we're trying to do a few different practices this year. It's a big thing. There's this kind of Jerry Maguire moment where I kind of want to just sit down and spew out all of this kind of stuff that I think that the industry should know, but I know that it might come back at me. But there's this thing that we're trying to do this year where I'm trying to get companies to understand that all of these massive companies out there have got these big, big CSR budgets and they've got no idea how to use them. then they've obviously got these massive marketing departments that are like, okay, well, let's build another competition, or let's build something, another activation. But the point is that, you know, if you can merge those two things, if you can merge CSR and the need for these companies to want to give the need for these companies to give money or funding back to people or communities that are less fortunate, why can't you utilize as a marketing objective the bartenders in the industry as a conduit to give that money back? So what I mean by that is they want to give money back to they're going to give money back to a World Food Program or building a school for some kids in Kenya, for example. Why don't you just, as part of your activation to build loyalty for your brand, instead of getting them just to make more cocktails, get them to be a part of that program and to be part of building a school for some kids? What do they get out of that? They get love, satisfaction, real memory.
Yeah. You
know? So this year, as part of a look towards our community and what we can do as a community within Drink Magazine and further afield, we're trying to build campaigns based on understanding what carbon footprint is, so that bartenders together within our community can start understanding what the world around us. You know, a lot of them haven't had the opportunity of going through to university and having worldly experiences.
Yeah.
So what I want to be able to do is to try and give as many of those experiences as possible through whether it's through some kind of talks to as many bartenders that we possibly can do, which is why the platform is so important, and try and make sure that, you know, the idea of sustainability through stopping the use of plastic straws, all the way through to minimal waste programs and understanding that they're chucking so much money away in their bins at the end of every night when they can reuse some of that stuff.
Yeah.
So there's a big thing for me this year of trying to utilize DMBA to kind of like teach the industry that.
Why is this happening to you? I mean, what was the spark that kind of ignited that? Because is it just because of your time out here and then realizing it's kind of giving back to, you know, the group, which I think you've been doing that for a long time. Why the spark for this sustainability and all that and giving back in a sense?
I think it was a couple of years ago. I went, a friend of mine has an adventure tourism company called A Large Minority. And it's, I went on this trip, which is a tuk-tuk race across Sri Lanka. And you jump in a tuk-tuk and you paint up the tuk-tuk as however you want. You can decorate it however you want. And then you basically go on this 10-day journey across through the hills of Sri Lanka and down to the southern beaches. But as part of it, the money that you spend, 10 or 15% of that money goes back towards local communities and schools.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you go out and some of the different objectives and some of the different challenges as a team that you go on, you go and, for example, you've got to go to a market, buy as much vegetables and bits and pieces as you can. Go and find a local family, knock on the door and go in and go, hi, how's it going? We'd really love it if we could join and have dinner with you. Here's lots of food for you for the next few days, but it would be good to have a nice meal with you.
Did you do that?
Yeah, yeah.
What was there? I mean, I don't know how I would feel if I was somebody opening the door and then seeing, you know, somebody completely foreign just.
Yeah. And then you find that the family is actually probably two or three times as big as.
So you didn't have enough groceries actually.
No, we did. So the best thing was, and then we worked with the grandmother to chop the food and kind of like, and we sat down and we talked, you know, in part to the family, and we sat down and had dinner and everyone's staring, but you're talking about different bits and pieces and it was just a really nice thing. And then we also picked plastic up off the beaches. We went to the local school and with the money that had been made from the 10 or 15% that was given back from our fees, they'd given violins and other bits and pieces. So this one of the schools, they did this whole kind of show for us as we came in, and they all said, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Wow.
So the point was, is that was my first idea. Constantly trying to come up with ideas and how we can make our industry more exciting and how we can make more reasons for people to want to be a part of our industry. So, you know, whenever I saw that and I said to Julian, my friend that founded the business, I was like, dude, is there any way that we can bring like brands into this and try and get brands to come in, and each brand can buy a tuk-tuk or buy the team's by the team's fee, but I'll charge more money to the brands because then we can give more money back through that whole process, and then have a few more charitable bits and pieces that goes through that journey, where then the bartenders go with their brand ambassador friend of theirs who's nominated these two bartenders, not because they've won a competition, but because of a real loyalty to the brand. And it's a reward-based scheme based on being able to do that. So I never actually managed to get that one off the ground, because it was just logistically, I needed to go to heaps of global companies and get each company to, and my time is being spent trying to build China specifically. Yeah. So that was the spark. That was the spark that kind of said, well, maybe we can, instead of, we like to do lots of activations. There's lots of ideas of wanting to teach bartenders acting and wanting to teach bartenders and how to feel more confident in front of their guests. But I think at the same time, a way to build confidence is not just by having a happy client leave, but it's to build them within.
Yeah.
And, you know, build them from within and make them feel fulfilled, not just in their job as a bartender, but their job as a human being.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of like snowballed with me, just like, I'd love to see if I could do more objectives with brands where we can have a two-pronged approach that enables us to the brand will always benefit sitting on the back of that. You just need to make sure that the program that you're putting in front of the bartender is not going to be generic and just like, our vodka is distilled two times. We blah, 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 blah. We filter it through diamonds and blah, 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 and all these different other bits and pieces. And it's just like, oh, same old stuff sometimes. Sometimes it's really, really nice to just have something a little bit different and have a program that can give back to utilize these guys to give back to other people.
Well, I think that's exactly what happens, is it also, especially in the spirit industry and China in general, I don't think, you know, a lot of bartenders here, they probably realize how lucky they are. So much attention is being focused on China right now with all these trainings and kind of brand presentations and guest bartenders trying to come into town. And you see it. It's like, what can we do that actually connects them beyond the cocktail, that connects them in a brand, you know, in a brand sense, as well as just, like you said, how can we make them feel fulfilled or stronger as a person so that brand is so positive in their mind that they're more than brand ambassadors now. They really live through it because they understand the values match theirs. So very interesting. Now, a lot of things, you know, a lot of people are probably asking themselves, you know, what do you see the future for Drink Magazine Asia? I know that your website right now is in English, Chinese, Thai, Koreans. I'm pretty sure you're nonstop running around. What can we expect? What's the future apart again from the sustainability and growing that and creating more benefits for the community? What can we expect from Drink Magazine and also Thirsty Work Production?
I did a trends talk the other day for Marriott International, and I was trying to pull out a couple of different, you know, they're asking me to do a global trends talk. And I was trying to pull out these different bits and pieces that could teach the 10 or 12 different bartenders who are brought in from across the country at this final little competition about what's going on. And there's a couple of different points there, including the sustainability option we've just talked about. But one of them was kind of like, this point now that's happening, you know, to an extent it's happening, definitely happening globally. It's already happened globally, but what you see to start happening is starting to happen in China now is this point of people refining cocktails, is taking cocktails and to a different degree. So you see places, and I'll give a couple of examples, but you see places like Sober Company, like Speak Low, like the new A&D in Jinshan Lu, it's just opened, Cannery in Nest, and Zook, which is at the Sukhothai Hotel where Vincenzo is just started. You know, these different places are taking, they're clarifying your lemon juices and all your different citrus juices. They're creating milk punches. They're roto-vapping, and they're doing all kinds of different weird and wonderful things to create an amazing drink for the customer. So what I see the industry getting to is potentially drinks lists decreasing in size, but the quality of each drink going up, specifically going up, whether it comes down to the quality of the drink inside or the glass that it's sitting in, or from every perspective there, everyone is trying to, and all the consumers are trying to, they're all trying to kind of elevate each drinking scenario. People are going out less, but when they go out, they're enjoying, they're spending more money specifically on one drink than to be going out and getting 50 bottles of champagne in a bottle club and just getting wasted.
Yeah.
it's starting to move away from just going out and getting wasted to kind of like going out, and you'll see it in the wine industry, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
So we want to basically ambassador that. We want to, you know, we're not purveyors of going out and getting smashed. We're purveyors of of looking at beverage and how you can elevate each social situation with the right drinks.
I love that. I think that's going to be the quote of the day, as long as, you know, elevating that for the right. Oh, no, I forgot it now. But anyways, we're almost done on time. And I just wanted to fire five questions. I always do that. As I fire a couple questions, you have to answer them as quickly as possible. So my first question is, what's your favorite cocktail?
What's my favorite cocktail? What pops in my head straight away was the pina colada.
So, yeah. So you're already ready for your vacation time. Yeah. Second question, what's your favorite cocktail and food pairing?
Cocktail and food pairing? I'll actually say, I had it the other day, I'll say a Gibson with some 5J ham.
Really?
Yeah, like a good martini. It doesn't have to be a Gibson, but a good gin martini with some Serrano ham.
Okay, I'll have to try that one. Third question, what is your favorite, well, this is probably, I don't want to put anybody in the spot. What is your favorite, you know, cocktail or bar to go to at the end of the day? If you just want to relax, where's your go-to spot in the city?
Oh, golly.
And I don't want to put you on the spot. I realize I just put you on the spot on that one.
No, honestly, this answer can go too long. Right now I'm enjoying A&D. Right. As a new bar that's just opened from the Trench Group, Trench Bar Group in Japan. They've just opened A&D.
Nice. Fourth question. Out of China, what's your other favorite spot to visit for cocktails? Could be anywhere in the world. Favorite country.
For cocktails or for the experience of, it's definitely.
For both.
Again, it could be a really long answer, but the most recent one that I enjoyed a lot was Dante in New York City.
Really?
So, yeah, Dante's. I had them pop up the other day in nice. The Portman Ritz-Carlton. But Naren Young, Dante, New York City. Great, great place. Great place to have breakfast. Great place to have dinner.
And finish off with drinks. That yeah. sounds like a really good spot
but
now.
Their Bloody Mary at breakfast is amazing.
So actually, you should start with like a cocktail. You should start with a cocktail and all the way end it. Yeah. Well, we have that recorded for you.
Yeah, there you go.
And of course, my last question is, how can we get in touch with you and how can we follow all your adventures?
On WeChat, I'm Theo_Watt. So Theo_Watt. If anyone wants to add me, message me on that, that's fine. On email, probably Theo@thirstywork.asia. So Theo@thirstywork.asia. I'm not going to spell it all out. I think it's evident. Yeah. So, I mean, very happy. 25 minutes isn't enough, I think, to tell the whole story, but kind of like appreciate the platform.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you back for sure. And of course, I'm going to add that all in the show notes. So not to worry too much about that. But thank you so much. You know, it's been a while coming. I really wanted to have you on because I know you're definitely an expert in this industry. And thank you for everything that you've created, you know, with your company and all the platform that you've given a lot of bartenders, the opportunity and people in the drink industry, that is. And I think that's something we didn't talk enough in the podcast is what you've done beyond just cocktails, beyond just, you know, spirits. Mm. You've done a lot in various beverages as well. Mm. So we'll have to have you back then.
Love to come. Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Cheers.